I was told my father was killed in the war. Whenever I questioned my mother about his death, she didn't say any more than that he'd served with the Royal Gloucestershire Regiment and had been killed fighting on the Western Front only days before the peace treaty with Germany was signed. Grandma said my dad had been a brave man, and once, when we were alone in the house, she showed me his medals. My grandpa rarely offered an opinion on anything, but then he was deaf as a post, so he might not have heard the question in the first place. The only other man I can remember was my Uncle Stan, who used to sit at the top of the table at breakfast time. When he left of a morning, I would often follow him to the city docks where he worked. Every day I spent at the dockyard was an adventure. Cargo ships coming from distant lands and unloading their wares, rice, sugar, bananas, jute, and many other things I'd never heard of. Once the holds had been emptied, the dockers would load them with salt, apples, tin, even coal, my least favourite, because it was an obvious clue to what I'd been doing all day and annoyed my mother, before they set off again to I knew not where. I always wanted to help my Uncle Stan unload whatever ship had docked that morning, but he just laughed, saying, "All in good time, my lad." It couldn't be soon enough for me. But without any warning, school got in the way. I was sent to Merriwood Elementary when I was 6, and I thought it was a complete waste of time. What was the point of school when I could learn all I needed to at the docks? I wouldn't have bothered to go back the following day if my mother hadn't dragged me to the front gates, deposited me, and returned at 4 o'clock that afternoon to take me home. I didn't realize Mum had other plans for my future, which didn't include joining Uncle Stan in the shipyard. Once Mum had dropped me off each morning, I would hang around in the yard until she was out of sight, then slope off to the docks. I made sure I was always back at the school gates when she returned to pick me up in the afternoon. On the way home, I would tell her everything I'd done at school that day. I was good at making up stories, but it wasn't long before she discovered that was all they were, stories. One or two other boys from my school also used to hang around the docks, but I kept my distance from them. They were older and bigger and used to thump me if I got in their way. I also had to keep an eye out for Mr. Haskins, the chief ganger, because if he ever found me loitering, to use his favourite word, he would send me off with a kick up the backside and the threat, "If I see you loitering round here again, my lad, I'll report you to the headmaster." Occasionally, Haskins decided he'd seen me once too often, and I'd be reported to the headmaster, who would leather me before sending me back to my classroom. My form master, Mr. Holcomb, never let on if I didn't show up for his class, but then he was a bit soft. Whenever my mum found out I'd been playing truant, she couldn't hide her anger and would stop my halfpenny-a-week pocket money. But despite the occasional punt from an older boy, regular leatherings from the headmaster, and the loss of my pocket money, I still couldn't resist the draw of the docks. I made only one real friend while I loitered around the dockyard. His name was old Jack Tarr. Mr. Tarr lived in an abandoned railway carriage at the end of the sheds. Uncle Stan told me to keep away from old Jack because he was a stupid, dirty old tramp. He didn't look that dirty to me, certainly not as dirty as Stan, and it wasn't long before I discovered he wasn't stupid either. After lunch with my Uncle Stan, one bite of his Marmite sandwich, his discarded apple core, and a swig of beer, I would be back at school in time for a game of football, the only activity I considered it worth turning up for. After all, when I left school, I was going to captain Bristol City, or build a ship that would sail around the world. If Mr. Holcomb kept his mouth shut and the ganger didn't report me to the headmaster, I could go for days without being found out. And as long as I avoided the coal barges and was standing by the school gate at 4 o'clock every afternoon, my mother would never be any the wiser. Every other Saturday, Uncle Stan would take me to watch Bristol City at Ashton Gate. On Sunday mornings, Mum used to cart me off to Holy Nativity Church, something I couldn't find a way of getting out of. Once the Reverend Watts had given the final blessing, I would run all the way to the recreation ground and join my mates for a game of football before returning home in time for dinner. By the time I was 7, it was clear to anyone who knew anything about the game of football that I was never going to get into the school team, let alone captain Bristol City. But that was when I discovered that God had given me one small gift, and it wasn't in my feet. To begin with, I didn't notice that anyone who sat near me in church on a Sunday morning stopped singing whenever I opened my mouth. I wouldn't have given it a second thought if Mum hadn't suggested I join the choir. I laughed scornfully. After all, everyone knew the choir was only for girls and sissies. I would have dismissed the idea out of hand if the Reverend Watts hadn't told me that choir boys were paid a penny for funerals and tuppence for weddings. My first experience of bribery. But even after I'd reluctantly agreed to take a vocal test, the devil decided to place an obstacle in my path, in the form of Miss Eleanor E. Munday.